live from the studios of KQNA, the talk of the Quad Cities.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule.
It's time for Talk of the Town, Soup Scoop, with Prescott Unified School District, Soup of Schools, Joe Howard, and Assistant Soup, Marty Reed. Today's Talk of the Town is sponsored in part by House Chilson & Associates, Prescott College, Elite Reflections Salon & Day Spa, Augie's Restaurant, the Prescott Chamber of Commerce, A&E Reaper Graphics, Foothills Bank, Barrett Propane, Yavapai Regional Medical Center, and Prescott Brewing Company. And now, here are your hosts for today's Talk of the Town Soup Scoop, Joe Howard and Marty Reed.
Welcome to the Soup Scoop on Talk of the Town, 11:30 a.m., 99.9 and 95.5 FM streaming worldwide on KQNA.com. I'm Joe Howard here with my co-host Marty Reed. Welcome to the show. October's such a great time in Prescott. The weather's fantastic and the leaves are starting to change. Can you believe that we're approaching the end of our first quarter already? And this has been a very strange start to the school year, the weirdest school year that I know, but our planned phased-in approach is working in the Prescott Unified School District. We've been able to keep the COVID-19 out of our schools so far by following recommended health guidelines and working closely with our students and families. They're doing a great job. Health and safety remains the number one priority as we look at our community health metrics and we talk about the next phase of in-person learning with our seven district schools. We understand and appreciate that the Prescott schools have a unique advantage to other districts in Arizona because PUSD is the heart of a beautiful community. The support and partnerships of our students and teachers and staff and that we receive from our Prescott community is amazing, and we're so grateful. PUSD has a rich history, over 150 years in this community, and we look forward to a bright future.
And today we want to share with our community some information about the positive impact that Prescott Unified School District has had on our thriving community. The importance of having highly qualified teachers in our classrooms, and also share facts about our district funding and budgets. We will talk with local community leaders Rosemary Agnesens as well as Nikki Idikovich, both community organizers and advocates for public education in Prescott and the state of Arizona. We'll also talk with Arizona Public Schools CFO of the Year, our very own Brian Moore. We have a lot of information to share with you today on today's show, so thanks for tuning in to the Soup Scoop. You are listening to Soup Scoop on Talk of the Town, 11:30 a.m., 99.9 and 95.5 FM, streaming worldwide at kqna.com.
You're listening to Talk of the Town Soup Scoop. Now listen up, because class is back in session.
Well,
our first call-in guest today, welcome back to the call-in edition of the Soup Scoop. And our first call-in guest today is Rosemary Agnesens. Rosemary has over 50 years of experience in education, is a community organizer for the Yavapai County Education Service Agency, and heads up the Prescott Education Advocacy Council, known as PEAC. She is a former Abiajah Jaguar as the principal of Abiajah from 2011 to 2014. Welcome, Rosemary.
Thank you so much, Marty. It's good to be with you.
Hey, Rosemary. Great to have you on the show. And just so listeners know, Rosemary Agnesens is one of my very favorite people. And I'm sure there's competition there's many other people who believe that also. We just had a wonderful time and learned so much from you, Rosemary, when you were principal with us here in PUSD. And we're just so grateful that you're still spending your time in our community, supporting our schools. Thanks for being on the show.
You're very welcome. It's good to be with you. And Prescott is home, so I guess you're stuck with me.
Well, our goal in asking you to be on the show was to help some of our listeners feel some of that passion that you have about public education. So we thought the best way to do that was get you on the show and just ask you a few questions that we know you're passionate about. The first one I would like you to talk about, Rosemary, is really just in general, would you talk about the importance of investment in education, which is, I think, one of your main passions?
Most definitely. Education is really the cornerstone, and its public school system is really the cornerstone for any vibrant and thriving community. And we know that if you want something to grow and to become strong, and you need to invest. I think any business owner My dad was in business for many, many years, and he would always say you invest back into your company, whether that is equipment or even more importantly, it's about your human capital. How are you training leaders? How are you offering opportunities to people to learn? And if we're not funding education, we're trying to do it on a shoestring. When there's so many opportunities our children could possibly be missing because we are not investing. We are not really putting putting our real focus on the investment. We have been disinvesting in education for 30 years. Tax cuts, tax credits have diminished what can go to our schools. And you can't grow a company, you can't grow a school system without investment. It's about your human capital. And our public school system is about the future of not only our community, it's about the future of our state. And if we're not investing in that that population, what do we think we're doing? There's a very good quote from the Hoover Institution, which is a conservative think tank. And they said, Eric Hanushek said in 2016, economic growth is directly related to the skills of the workforce. The skills of our workforce are highly dependent on our state schools. Well, what are we doing to our workforce if we're not investing in our schools? We have to invest for our students that we have now and for the future, their future, but also for the future of our communities and our state. And we've been a little bit slow on really doing that in Arizona. And another another comment would be teachers and schools are not expenses to be curbed. It's not how you can get by with less. They're really necessary assets for the growth of our state's economy. And how are we answering that obligation?
Rosemary, when you talk about we are disinvesting, who is we?
Well, the we is mainly our state. Our state legislature has been, through tax cuts, has been disinvesting heavily in education since the mid-90s. Back in the 70s, our state was probably in the middle of the pack in terms of the country, in terms of what we were providing for education. You know, when I teach this, there's a chart I use that in the 70s, the state was taking per $1,000 of personal income about $55 per $1,000 of personal income. By the 90s, that starts a trajectory straight downward, and we are now taking something like $35 per $1,000 of personal income, knowing that our state is growing in population. Our state is also growing in the number of children that live in poverty. And if you've been in education long enough, you know that our children in poverty need an extra safety net to help them fill some gaps. And so it's the state and the decisions on both administrations, both parties have made deliberate decisions about what goes into, what funding goes into education.
Rosemary, you're sure delivering what I set up in terms of the passion that you have, so we appreciate that. Can you give a little background to our listeners in terms of, you just mentioned children in poverty and that type of thing. I know you have a lot of experience in your education career with that. Can you just walk quickly through your teaching and administrative career so folks know
Sure.
where you come from?
Well, let me start with, I was born and raised in Detroit, so I know what poverty looks like based on the community in which we live. So that's number one. Number two, I was fortunate enough to be able to work in Central America. Another whole level of poverty and what happens to children when there are not safety nets. My teaching and principalship really happened in Phoenix, Arizona, where I was first language director at Creighton School in the Creighton School District and then principal starting in 2000. And 99.9% of our students were a free and reduced lunch, mostly newly arrived from Mexico. Most were learning English, about 90%. A good portion of our parents were, you know, did not speak English. And those were real gaps to fill. And So that's the poverty I've seen. And I've seen a school, that Creighton school, move from an underperforming school to a, at that time with the Ames test, to a, you know, achieving, highly achieving. But it took 11 years because of those poverty gaps and because of 50% of mobility within a school throughout one year. So our public schools need funding, and they need more than what they're getting. The question can't be, what money do we have left at the end of our budget session at the legislature? What money do we have left, and what can we give education? It has to be, what do our children need to succeed? What do all our children need to succeed, and how do we fund that to the best of our ability and way more than what we're doing now?
So, Rosemary, how can you tie that to the kind of interesting pattern that Arizona has, where local school districts have to ask their taxpayers for money in bonds and overrides to supplement the lack of funding in from the state?
Well, I believe it was back in the 80s that the legislature actually decided that they would equalize across the board, so everybody gets the same amount of money. But if districts need more, they have to go out for bonds and overrides. The problem with that is some districts will never be able to pass a bond or an override. They don't have, they're either not the political will, or there just isn't the ability to pass that. And so buildings crumble. Maintenance can't happen, or it's done on a shoestring, and you can only do so much with duct tape. And so if these are the assets that we have in our communities for all children, our legislature and our governor has an obligation to do what they need to do. You can't live on a promise of no taxes. Taxes are about how do we fund the services that our communities need to be thriving, vibrant, places where people want to live, people want to engage, people want to raise their children. If our state isn't providing what we need, we will continue to have the teacher crisis that we have, with 1,700 classrooms left vacant, with 3,000 teachers who are in classrooms without the recognized standard qualifications and certifications. So there's a choice. Do we raise taxes?
Well,
and
Rosemary,
do we move forward?
We're going to have to cut you off there. We're running out of time. We could certainly talk to you for a lot longer regarding what's going on in the state of Arizona. And we sure do appreciate what you're doing to advocate for education.
Thank you. I'll keep doing it.
Good.
Take care.
We need you back longer.
You're listening
okay.
to the Soup Scoop on Talk of the Town, 1130 AM, 99.9 and 95.5 FM, streaming worldwide at kqna.com. We will be right back.
You're listening to Talk of the Town Soup Scoop. Now listen up, because class is back in session.
Welcome back, everybody. Joe Howard and Marty Reed here, and you're listening to the Soup Scoop. Thanks so much for tuning in today. We've got Nikki Indikovich on the line with us now. Nikki, are you there?
I'm here. Hi, guys.
Hey, great to hear from you. Hang on. I just wanted to hear your voice before I continue your intro. So, folks, Nikki's a community organizer for the Arizona Center for Economic Progress, and she is focused on bringing awareness to K-12 policy in Arizona. Her experience includes being organizer for the AZ Schools Now Coalition, and she also served as the state on the state legislative issues as the chair for the Arizona PTA. How awesome is that? As a mother of five children, her passion and work is focused on helping parents and teachers work together to advocate for responsible public school policy. Thank you, Nikki. In the wake of devastating cuts to K-12 budgets and years of failed policymaking intended to usher privatization of the public Arizona public schools. Welcome aboard, Nikki.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. I'm happy to be here.
Nikki, it's Marty here. Maybe you could give us a quick intro, and how did you get started in all this? We've gotten to know you over the years through various avenues to advocate for education, and How did you get sparked to you know, pick up the torch for education?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an interesting story, pretty boring and kind of plain. I am a mom. I enrolled my kids into their neighborhood public school, and I discovered that their needs weren't being met there. And despite the efforts of really great educators who were pouring their heart and soul into my little ones, you know, I saw some holes in the education that was offered at my local community school. And so I decided to get involved, you know, started off small, went to some school board meetings and volunteered for my parent group. And it kind of grew from there. You know, the more time I spent in the community here in Yavapai County, the more I heard parents' frustrations, educators' frustration about what was happening in our classrooms here in Arizona and things that kids were going through and families were going through. One of the things that really kind of propelled me forward in this movement up north was watching a number of school campuses get closed down all across Yavapai County. I mean, you look at Prescott and Sedona, they've lost campuses that were really the central point of these small rural communities. And the loss was huge for communities. And I was there, you know, when Sedona lost one of their campuses, and I sat with those parents and they expressed to me how much they loved their community school and it wasn't going to be in there anymore. And they weren't going to have this common place for kids to come together and learn. And their children were going to be bussed out for, you know, 45 minutes to an hour and a half in some areas up north. And so I decided to kind of take my passion for this issue, for our rural community schools and really fight to protect things that I find very valuable, in my personal life and across this country, really. I mean, our community schools are vital to our kids and I don't want my kids going without that. And I want to make sure my grandkids have these wonderful community schools they can come to and be with kids that live down the road, you know, and I was scared that was going to get lost. So I got in the fight as a mom and it's been quite a journey so far.
That's a great background and so genuine. And Nikki, we're just so appreciative of your leadership and the inspiration that you've given us all in terms of fighting for education. So let me ask you to continue the story. Once you got into the fight, what have your focuses been on? What's been the timeline of the things that you've identified as problems and how you've approached those problems in public education in Arizona?
Absolutely. I mean, I think if you look at the classroom crisis in Arizona, it's pretty obvious that cuts at the state level have really had a devastating impact on our rural communities. I was just listening to Rosemary. She absolutely nailed it with what she said. We're not investing in these vital community resources. And so you see that everywhere in the state, but you really see it in rural Arizona more. And that's because, you know, our community schools are so vital that you notice when they're not taken care of. You know, you notice when you go to the high school for Friday Night Lights, where everybody is on a Friday night, and they're struggling with a sound system or their turf is coming up or, you know, part of their buildings are shut down. So when you're in a small rural town, you see that stuff a little differently than you might on, you know, big campuses in metro areas. And so one of the things I've really tried to focus on is understanding this is a classroom crisis that's across the state, but it's really hitting hard in rural communities. And what we need to understand about that is that they need more resources to address the specific needs of rural schools. One of the things we keep seeing out of our district schools, which just makes me so proud, is how they bring communities together around a crisis, right? If you look back at any major community event that has happened, your rural school district was probably involved. You can look at the fires in Dewey-Humboldt, you know, the Humboldt Unified School District was involved in that emergency response. If you look at weather, if you look at anything that happens in a community, it is really your big district schools to come out and support their families and make their facilities available. And so the focus, you know, at the state level really needs to be looking at these rural communities in a different light and funding these districts to where they can be the center point of a community because that's going to raise your healthy families around you. You know, when you go to a district school, you'll often see Girl Scouts meeting, Boy Scouts meeting, the local Little League uses the fields. I mean, that's what we want from these investments we're putting into these buildings. These aren't just spaces for desks and children. They really are community centers where you get to know your neighbor. And that's something I think the state of Arizona has lost in their desire to talk about the cost of education or to cut expenses. They have forgotten that our communities really do revolve around these wonderful buildings packed full of educators. And that's where you meet your neighbors, and that's where your kids meet their friends. So, you know, I kind of always try to come back to how vital these buildings truly are to the communities around them, especially when it's a smaller town.
That's such a great perspective. And I know in Prescott, we feel very much that our schools are the heart of the community. Our schools are busy almost every night of the week with churches that rent them and using our athletic facilities. If someone needs to do a performance, you know, we have performance halls, and it is true. It is a place where the community coalesces. We have several fundraisers that take place on the Mile High football field. You know, it is an important part of the community, and I think you're right, especially in a rural community that doesn't have other big facilities, the community looks to the schools. Really good perspective.
You know, like, for example, during the pandemic, that's the place where not just our own students, but the whole community came to get food, for example. And we often talk about our schools as your schools, the community schools. But just a quick story to add, Nikki, from the history, when I used to be principal at Mile High Middle School, which was built in 39, I had elderly people come in often and say, can I just look in the auditorium? And I'd walk in with them, and typically they'd say things like, well, this is where the whole community would watch World War II reels together to see what news was happening. And so it's been that way for a long time, and I agree with you, and I'm pained to hear you say that Arizona is losing that concept.
It is. I mean, I was in Prescott just a couple of days ago, and I was driving by the high school, and I saw that you guys had these banners that I'm sure the kids made. It said kind of be kind, we're in this together. And it moments like that remind me, you know, why it's so important that we fight for these campuses. We fight for these kids, because that simple message from your high school students resonates in the community and pulls us together when we need it most. You know, we need something to believe in, and kids bouncing onto a campus ready to learn is a great thing to believe in. I mean, I need it right now. It kind of warmed me up for a little bit when I was visiting Prescott. And I hope that people don't forget how important that is. You know, I really hope they think about this when they're casting their vote for whatever we're discussing, or when they're out in the community talking about their schools. Remember that, you know, these places are healing for our community when we need them. And we want them there for generations.
Yeah, I'm going to use that be kind one to answer all my emails now. Hey, Nikki, I wonder if you could weigh in on a question I'm sure you get that we get a lot, that's a misunderstanding, or, you know, people say, yeah, but you guys got 20 by 2020 with Red for Ed, and the governor gave you all that money. You should be good now, right? How would you suggest, how do you answer that, and how would you answer that to our listeners?
Yeah, I think, you know, I do get this question a lot, and while I'm sure the teaching community is great that Governor Ducey, you know, was paying attention 2 years ago and was really engaged with that workforce, I think the proof really is in the pudding. You know, if you look at the staffing reports that are coming out right now, we have almost 30% of our classrooms don't have qualified teachers in them. And so you can say that there was some kind of an attempt to correct this, but really it is the workforce that will tell us, you know, when we've done enough by our teachers. And that's the issue that I think we need to keep in everybody's forefront, is these are great educators. They are not asking us for a lot. We're 47th in the country for teachers' pay, yet we run, you know, 25th to 27th in cost of living. And so it's not as though, you know, that payment wasn't appreciated. It's not as though we don't want to continue to work with the governor on more efforts like that. But to make it sound like 20 by 2020 was the last payment or the last attempt that needs to be made to address this classroom crisis is really ignoring the data that tells us Arizona teachers are fleeing their classrooms. They are frustrated. You know, and the top two things that we hear out of educators consistently is the low pay, and then of course the environment in which we expect them to teach. Oversized classrooms add a lot of stress on a job that's already, you know, difficult. It adds a lot of stress on a job that doesn't pay well. And so it's just less and less people want to enter this profession. And then you factor in kind of the political ramifications of being a teacher. It doesn't take long. You get on any social media platform and you will hear, you know, attacks on our educators, attacks on our administrators. And that stuff really weighs down on the teaching community, because what teachers really want to do is rally a community behind a child and their education. You know, no teacher wants to spend their time defending themselves or their right to be paid a professional wage. And so if Arizona is going to get serious, you know, and take the steps after 20 by 2020, then they need to start having some respect for that profession, you know, and really valuing our teachers like they value us and our families and our children. And I think when you get that narrative dealt with, you know, and you start turning the corner on respecting this profession and valuing our educators, a lot of these issues will work themselves out. But that mindset really has to be not, you know, what's one little thing I can do to calm everybody down, but how do I make people want to enter Arizona classroom and teach our kids?
That's so true, Nikki, and I hear it often from teachers. It's a combination of the pay, the salary, of course, a professional salary like you mentioned, but it's also that feeling of being valued and being an important part of the community and understanding the role that teachers have in a child's life. I mean, we're seeing that now as kiddos can't come to school and they're home and they're suffering because they're not getting, you know, the structure and the attention that they get at school. And, you know, I do see that a lot where teachers just do not feel like a valued member of the community. So we are lucky in Prescott that in Prescott and the Prescott area that we don't quite see those numbers of teachers leaving. We tend to do get some qualified teachers in the area. But, Nikki, can you talk about the salary of the Prescott area versus the state average salary? Do you have information on that?
I do. So we did a little bit of research, you know, about 6 months ago to just kind of get an idea of where our teaching professionals were. And one of the things that we see is that our rural communities, Prescott included in this, are often offering, you know, $4,000 to $7,000 in a lower pay for those educators. And that's, you know, another issue that we see with our rural schools. They have to overcome that pay discrepancy in Maricopa. And the reason that you see that in Maricopa is because typically Maricopa school districts are more able to pass an override that will bring in those additional staffing dollars. And so when you look at Maricopa County and what they can do with teachers' pay, they can bump that up a little bit and really attract those quality educators to their district schools. When you factor in the fact that it's often more expensive to live in northern Arizona, and then you tell them they're going to be, you know, between $4,000 and $7,000 under their Maricopa pay, I mean, despite how beautiful it is up here and the fact that we have snow, that might not be enough for a lot of educators to attract them to our area. And so districts in rural Arizona really have to consider that in how they place the limited resources that they have for staffing. And oftentimes that can look, you know, very different from one campus to the next. How they prioritize teachers' pay to attract those great educators from Maricopa County or out of state, knowing that we're offering them, you know, a smaller salary at a higher cost of living. And I mean, it doesn't take much to figure out that that doesn't add up for young educators. So district schools that are out in rural communities really have to try to bump that pay up however they can. If they can, you know, try to move money around or pass overrides, which can be notoriously difficult in rural Arizona, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make up for that deficit that we see where we're competing for these educators to come to these small communities for us.
Well, Nikki, you are such a wealth of knowledge, and I know that We have a lot of passionate people for education in our community. Is there a website or a great place for people to reach out to you if they maybe want to have you come and speak to their groups or their clubs or their Rotary clubs and share more about education?
You can always find me on Facebook. It's Nikki Indikovich. It's a tricky last name, so I'll spell it. Indikavitch. I'd love to come and visit if we've got groups that are doing some work around education policy. I'm always available to meet with parents and community members that want to hear more about this, especially in rural Arizona. That really is where my heart lies. So if you're in a community and you're struggling to understand education policy, I'd love to hear from you. And thank you guys for having me on. I always love talking to you, too.
Well,
thank you, Nikki.
We're grateful, Nikki. Thanks for all your information, and thanks for, you know, really being a great part that pulls together all of our public schools here in northern Arizona. We all work together, and you're a big part of that. So we want to thank you. And, folks, when we return from the break, we'll have PUSD Chief Financial Officer Brian Moore on the line with us to talk more about budgeting in Arizona and the reason that the PUSD School Board has asked for an override. So stay with us. You're listening to the Soup Scoop on Talk of the Town, 1130 a.m., 99.9 and 95.5 FM. Streaming worldwide on KQNA.com. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Talk of the Town Soup Scoop. Now listen up, because class is back in session.
Welcome back to the Soup Scoop on Talk of the Town. I'm Marty Reed here with Joe Howard, and we want to welcome the Arizona School CFO of the Year, Brian Moore. Thanks for joining us on the Soup Scoop, Brian.
Thank you, Mrs. Reed and Mr. Howard, for having me. I hope I can add some good information to the radio broadcast that you had two fantastic guests already, Rosemary Agnesis and Nikki Indikovich. So thanks for having me.
Brian Moore, long time no see. Good to hear your voice. And we'd like to kind of help our listeners understand a little bit about Arizona budget and a little bit about the USD override, why, how, those types of things, how the last one went. So we got a segment, maybe two. We might hold you on to the next segment if we have a good conversation going. But let's start off with the fact that the 2015 override, which was overwhelmingly passed by voters in 2015, is sunsetting. And that's caused a new override to become on the ballot. Will you talk about what that means, that an override is sunsetting?
Absolutely. So just the nature of overrides in Arizona, their first 7 years. But unfortunately, they're only fully funded for the first five. So thank you so much to our community and our voters in 2015. They voted and passed, like Mr. Howard said, by a lot, two-thirds of a yes vote for a 4.66% override. And we have been funded for that, and we are currently in the fifth year. That override had brought in about $930,000 to $940,000 addition to Prescott Unified School District's budget, which allowed for a 5.1% increase in all staff pay starting in 2015. But like I said, it's only fully funded for the first 5 years. Us being Prescott Unified School District being in its fifth year, we have two choices. The first choice is to let it continue for the sixth and seventh year. But unfortunately, after the fifth year, it begins to sunset, like Mr. Howard mentioned. And what that means is that it starts to be reduced in the revenue that is brought in from property taxes by a third. So without going to the voters to ask for a continuation, or in our case, a little bit of an additional monies override, we would receive about $315,000 less for the 21-22 school year. And then, again, it would reduce by a third going into the seventh year. And then finally, after the seventh year, there would be no additional money brought in from the override. So essentially after the fifth year to just after the seventh year, Prescott Unified School District would have about $950,000 or let's just round up, about $1 million less in revenue brought in from the 2015 override tax or vote.
I see. And so our school board voted to go back to the voters to renew the override, so we wouldn't have to cut that $1 million. Plus, I think they wanted to add a little bit more to it because, as we heard earlier, we are $5,000 to $7,000 lower than the state average, but yet have higher costs of living. So, tell us if this override that's going to be on the ballot coming up in November passes, what impact will that have on PLC, Brian?
Well, one of the most important things that it'll do is it would extend the existing 4.66% override. So the money's, and in 2015, 100% of the money that was brought in from the override and continued through this year went to salaries and benefits for PUSD employees. So we would be able to continue to maintain that raise that was established 5 years ago. But with the governing board and some community members that spoke to the governing board, they felt that our community would support a little bit more of an override. And so they voted and called to a vote in November for an 8% override. An additional 3.34%. So it would be new revenue that would be brought into Prescott Unified above and beyond the $950,000, $940,000 that was established in 2015. And once again, as the voter pamphlet says, 100% of that additional money would go to salaries and benefits of all PUSD staff members. It equates to about an additional $800,000 to our general budget control limit, our maintenance and operation budget. And the way I calculate it, it would provide PUSD staff members for an additional 3.7% raise. That would be the 8% would allow for an additional raise for staff members.
Brian, I knew we had you. Go ahead, Mark.
No, go ahead, Joe.
Well, Brian, I knew if we had you on the show, we were going to hear a lot of numbers, like any time we talk to you. So thanks for sharing the numbers. Love it. What I want to clarify to the voters and have you report on a little bit is that in 2015, they overwhelmingly passed a bond and an override, a $15 million bond. We are not, PUSD is not asking voters to approve a bond this election in 2020. But could you talk about how that money was spent from 2015, from that bond, and is still being spent, and how that has supported our public schools when we were cut from the state in that category of buildings and maintenance?
Oh, I'd love to, because there really are two subjects, like you said, a bond and an override. And the way I, you know, talk about it is an override is essentially it's people, it's staff, it's benefits, it's it can be spent on, you know, consumables. But a bond, that's an override. A bond is basically stuff. It's stuff that has a life longer than a year. So while our voters most generously voted for an override in 2015, they also voted to approve a $15 million bond. And over the last 5 years, we have done a lot of things with that bond money. That has included just recently paving our parking lots at all of our schools. We have increased our technology and our Wi-Fi internet service, one-to-one devices starting at the high school down. We used a good portion for energy management savings, which was such a wise choice. We put money towards being more energy efficient, and that investment has allowed for us to have, and at that time it was a guaranteed, about $150,000 in energy savings through water, through electricity, having better air conditioning units. Our pupil transportation fleet, we've purchased over, I believe it's now 12 new buses to drive our students safely to and from school. And so the bond is essentially, you know, it's stuff. It's the things that unfortunately since 2018 with our stuff, our capital budget being cut. And the way I calculated since 2008, PUSD has received $18 million worth of less capital funding due to cuts. And our bond has allowed us to fill in those gaps. And our voters have done such an incredible thing by approving it. And so we're continuing to still have some of that bond money. It needs to be spent in total by April of 2023. Our future plans are to increasingly invest in technology for our students, a little bit more for our transportation. And anyone passes any of our schools, our pothole-filled parking lots are no longer that way. And that is solely because our voters voted to pass that $50 million bond.
Well, I remember one big bond project that we did that was really needed was the high school roof. When it rained outside at the high school, it was raining inside at the high school. And we spent a lot of money to repair that roof.
Yeah, we got lucky, too, because the state does have something called a school facilities board. And so our bond was able to help in some of those repairs. And luckily, the high school's roof was eligible for school facilities board funding. And so that money that is allocated to essentially fix our buildings. We used to get money called building renewal money, and that was simply to upkeep our buildings. And anyone knows that it's easier and less expensive to do preventative maintenance than wait for something that's broke. Now we are in a system where it's about to break, we need a request for that school facilities board money, and the high school roof did qualify, but our bond definitely helped fill the gap until that money became available to us.
Well, Brian, that's a good segue to what we're going to do for the fourth segment. We're going to take a break and have you talk a little bit more about how public schools in Arizona are funded. So when we return from the break, we'll hear more from Brian Moore, our CFO. You are listening to The Soup Scoop on Talk of the Town, 1130 AM, 99.9 and 95.5 FM, streaming worldwide at kqna.com. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Talk of the Town Soup Scoop. Now listen up, because class is back in session.
Welcome back to Soup Scoop on KQNA's Talk of the Town. I'm Joe Howard here with Assistant Superintendent Marty Reed and PUSD Chief Financial Officer Brian Moore. Brian, you still with us?
I am still with you.
Excellent. Well, we're just going to pick up where we took off because we just have a couple of minutes left. But I want to circle back to the PUSD override that's on the ballot for 2020. Again, not a bond this time. You just explained how we spent that money keeping our buildings up. But I want to just talk about the only thing on the ballot for PUSD, which is the override, and ask you to explain how that would affect the average homeowner.
All right, I'd love to. Essentially, the average homeowner has a market value for their house, but they're not taxed on that amount. They're taxed on what's called the assessed value, and it's usually about 50 to 55% of their market value. And so the average home assessed value in Prescott is $275,180. I know that number well. With the 4.66% override, the tax on that average assessed home is just a little over $31. If the voters are so inclined to say yes to the 8% override, that tax on that average house would go up just a little bit more than $22. That in order to give that additional raise to all staff. And essentially, it would bring our teachers from $6,000 less than the state average pay to just about $3,000 less than the state average pay. It's just $22 a year on that assessed value home. So they could expect just under a $54 tax on an 8% override for Prescott Unified School District. So that's the tax implication. Once again, you're only taxed on your assessed value, and actually you're taxed on 10% of your assessed value. The tax for the 8% override is literally just over 0.19%. So it's not even a percent, it's 1/5 of a percent. And so that, Mr. Howard, is what the tax implications would be for the 8% override.
Thank you for all of the numbers that you shared with us today. We wanted to get into how the budget generally works in Arizona, but I know that people are very interested in ballot measures right now. So it's good for us to share those facts today. We're sharing the facts. We're going to get back on the show again to talk about the budget. But we want to thank all of our listeners for joining us again this month on Soup Scoop. We want to thank our listeners and let them know that the commitment of the people who work for PUSD is unparalleled. Everyone from transportation to teachers are dedicated to bringing highly qualified education to our students while keeping a healthy and safe environment for our kids and each other. PUSD has been a very important part of our community for over 150 years, and because of the continued support and partnerships of the community, our future looks bright. Marty.
Please visit our website at prescottschools.com if you'd like more information about anything we talked about today, and join us again on Soup Scoop next month on November 4th, the day after the election at 4 p.m. You have been listening to the Soup Scoop on Talk of the Town, 1130 a.m., 99.9 and 95.5 FM, streaming worldwide at kqna.com.
You've been listening to Talk of the Town on KQ&A. Today's show was sponsored by House Chilson & Associates, Prescott Brewing Company, Cottonwood Area Transit, Gettles High Desert Mechanical, the Prescott Chamber of Commerce, Annie Reaper Graphics, Janessa's Family Hair Care, Barrett Propane, Augie's, Cliff Castle Casino, Yavapai Regional Medical Center, and Olson's for Healthy Animals. The views on today's show do not necessarily reflect the views of KQ&A, Prescott Valley Broadcasting, our employers, or our advertisers. Join us next time for Talk of the Town on the Talk of the Quad Cities, 1130 a.m. and 99.9 in Prescott, and at 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood, KQ&A.